Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dell, NABTrade's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. We talk about global investing as well as domestic on this podcast quite a bit, and I've recently finished a series of presentations at the ASX Investor Day, at which I was speaking about diversification using Australian listed products that invest offshore. At those events, and also with some of the emails we get from listeners, the single most frequently asked question I got was actually related to currency. Investors trying to understand what impact currency movements would have on returns when they invest offshore and what could be done to manage any risks associated with it. Today I have Chris Weldon, Portfolio Manager with Magellan, with me. Chris is a highly experienced investor and portfolio manager, and he can give really valuable insights into how to manage currency because Magellan offers both hedged and unhedged global portfolios for investors, which gives you the opportunity to choose your preferred option. Chris, thanks so much for joining me.
Very welcome, Gemma. Thanks for having me.
So, Chris, could you start with a really simple explanation of the impact of currency movements on returns for a global portfolio?
Sure. And we will keep it simple. At least we'll start there. And I think a simple example of an Australian investor owning an asset in the United States is probably the easiest place to start and was probably most common to people's own individual experiences. Now, that asset could be some shares in a US business, it could be a rental apartment, it could be a farm. It doesn't matter what the asset is, so long as it's based in the United States. And we'll also keep it simple by assuming that the Australian investor owns that American asset outright. That is, they have no debt against that asset. Now, the value of that American asset to an Australian investor is going to change as the Australian US dollar currency rate changes. If the US dollar strengthens against the Australian dollar, all else equal, that American asset is worth more to the Australian investor. And of course, the opposite is also true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so interestingly enough, in the last 10 years, there was a brief period where the Australian dollar was equal to the American dollar.
That's right.
So that was quite a nice little period as a benchmark for what can happen subsequently. Yeah. At the moment, the Australian dollar is substantially below the US dollar, and therefore you need more Australian dollars to buy one US asset than you did back when they were parity.
Yeah.
It's worth noting also that plenty of Australian listed companies derive earnings from offshore, so their revenue is impacted by currency movements. Can you give some examples of Australian companies that investors would probably hold where they have to think about currency movements impacting the revenue and also potentially the share price?
Yeah, I mean, that is correct. And let's give some examples, but also think before we do that, we need to distinguish here between translation impacts and transaction impacts from currency movements, because
okay.
Both are equally important. Let's start with the first one, the translation impact. This is analogous to the scenario I described in response to your first question. Any Australian business reporting their financial statements in Australian dollars has to report its offshore revenue and earnings, assets and liabilities. Now, those foreign revenues and expenses and assets and so on will be translated back to Australian dollars at the prevailing exchange rate. So, generally speaking, if the Australian dollar weakens against other currencies, the value of those foreign revenues and assets are going to be higher in Australian dollars. So that's just the translation impact. But of course, there's this other impact as well from currency movements, and that's the transaction impact. So if we return to the early example of an Australian investor owning an American farm, but let's assume now that the Australian investor financed that purchase of the farm with an Australian dollar loan. So our investor now has revenues from the farm based in US dollars, but their interest expense, because they borrowed in Australia, will be in Australian dollars. So we've got a currency mismatch here. Revenues being received in US dollars and part of their cost structure, their expense base, is being paid in Australian dollars. So should the US dollar weaken against the Australian dollar, the value in Australian dollars of that revenue from the farm are going to decline. But the investor's Australian dollar financing expenses are unchanged. So the profitability from that farm is going to decline. You've got falling revenues, but flat expenses, which is obviously not a good combination. So that's the currency transaction impact that any Australian business with offshore operations is exposed to. But to your question, any business that has offshore operations, any Australian business with offshore operations is going to be exposed to both. Both the transaction impact, to the extent that they don't have their offshore revenues and expenses perfectly matched in the same currency, there's going to be a transaction impact that will impact the profit and loss statement for that business. And then there is the translation impact, where those offshore revenues, earnings, assets, liabilities all have to be translated back to Australian dollars when that company reports its financial statements.
So many concerns for investors about that. Clearly, just from the conversations I've been having with people, it surprised me actually how primary it was as an issue for people when they're thinking about investing offshore, how much they were concerned. And obviously the Australian dollar is actually pretty volatile. In the last 10 years, it's been as high as $1.10 US down to, God, I remember when I went overseas for the first time and it was $3 Australian to the pound, which is really depressing because I was broke. And so felt very broke at the time. You know, so the Australian dollar moves around a lot, I imagine, relative to some other countries. Can you talk about typical ways an investor might try to manage this risk of the value of their international assets moving around all over the place because the dollar's moving around everywhere?
Yeah, managing risk is exactly how we think about currency exposures. A few of our global equity funds, as you mentioned at the top, the High Conviction Fund, the listed global trust, include a currency hedging program. Mm-hmm. But this program is operated to manage risks from offshore exposure. Rather than punting or any sort of betting or investing on currencies with the intent of adding value or adding additional returns to our clients' portfolios.
Right, so it's really worth digging into. So there's two different approaches that people can take on currency. One is, I've got a view on where it's going to go and I'm trying to make money out of it.
That's right.
The other is the one that you take, which is, we're just going to use it to protect the downside if the currency moves against us.
Exactly right. I mean, there's not to argue there's anything right or wrong with either of those. It's just our approach at Magellan is the latter, is using forward contracts typically to hedge our clients' exposure to non-Australian dollar equities that we own in our portfolios. And the way that we do that, so the portfolio managers here at Magellan, we think about what fair value for the Australian dollar versus an international currency like the US dollar might be. And if that currency pair is trading around our estimate of fair value, we want our portfolios to be roughly 50% hedged in that scenario. The further the Australian dollar weakens and moves below our estimate of fair value, the more hedging we apply to the portfolio. And we do this because we think the further the Australian dollar weakens below fair value, over time, the tendency will be for the Aussie dollar to strengthen and revert back to that fair value. Now, that strengthening in the Aussie dollar against, say, the US dollar, will impair the local value of any US dollar assets that we own for our clients. And so we want to offset that impairment through the gains that we would get from that currency forward contract. Mm. Of course, the opposite is also true, as we mentioned earlier.
So it's worth noting then that it's not a perfect science. You're not stripping out the risk completely. You're taking a position on what you believe will strip out the risk as best you can.
It is not a perfect science. It's a systematic process we have where we spend a fair bit of time thinking about what we think that fair value should be, and then what we call the upper bound and the lower bound for that currency. And at one of those bounds, we want our portfolio, and when we talk about portfolio, we just mean the equities in the portfolio. We don't hedge our cash, and we can talk about that if we need to. But at one bound, we want to have our portfolios and the equities in the portfolio completely hedged. Mm-hmm. And at the other bound, at the other extreme, we want our portfolios to be completely unhedged. Mm-hmm. And it's a very systematic process in between. Now, that's just our approach at Magellan, where we're just, again, trying to manage risk, but take your point that there are others out there who spend a lot of time thinking about currency movements and everything that goes into currency movements and try and use that as a source of generating alpha for their clients.
Mm. So what then, if I'm an investor looking at this, what are the major drivers of change in the Australian dollar? So what indicators are, tricky question, what indicators should an Australian investor keep an eye on if currency is something you're worried about?
I wish I knew. I mean, that's in all seriousness, trying to decipher the short and medium term drivers of movements in any currency is incredibly hard. And I think we try and be very honest about that and recognise that's not our game. Not to say that it can't be done, but it's just we don't think we bring any differentiated ability to the table when it comes to short-term currency movements and the drivers for them. Over time, over longer periods of time, I think there's some support and there's some logic that things like inflation differentials and interest rate differentials should have some bearing on currency movements. But the most honest answer I can give your listeners is that I don't know. Our perspective is that we're hedging to manage risk for our clients rather than as a source of driving additional alpha. And it's always worth remembering that all these, you know, these big macroeconomic developments that are constantly occurring in the world, they all collide in the currency markets. Mm. And if you sort of take a step back and you try and be intellectually honest about this, all of those things are so incredibly hard to predict how they will impact. There's a lot of randomness, there's a lot of uncertainty. And so trying to second guess all of those big macro developments and how they may impact different currency pairs, we just think that's challenging, very challenging.
I do know when I was first learning about currency, the idea that the Australian dollar would ever exceed the US dollar in value would be unthinkable, absolutely unthinkable, and that was at a period when it was sort of, you know, two Australian dollars to the US dollar. And there was a period there in the sort of post-GFC era where the Australian dollar absolutely exceeded the US dollar, thanks to largely the mining boom and also us having much higher interest rates. Yeah. And then that changed, but you wouldn't have predicted it in a million years.
No,
you know, it was supposed to never happen.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing with the Australian dollar too, and you see with a few other currencies around the world, is it's generally regarded as a pro-cyclical currency. You know, if the global economy is doing well and there's a sort of a risk on, quote unquote, trade, it tends to support the Aussie dollar, generally speaking. And the opposite has also been true from time to time, where there's a risk off trade, people tend to flock back to reserve currency like the United States dollar, to the yen, to the Swiss franc, some of those other currencies away from the Aussie dollar. So that's something we've always tried to be mindful here of Magellan, is we do have generally speaking, a pro-cyclical currency that many of investors have as their base currency. You know, we all live, spend we receive our earnings and we spend our income on an Australian dollar basis.
So you just discussed it, but yeah, currency movements, notoriously difficult to predict. Anyone who would like an example, so back in February, I interviewed Ray Attrell, who's our chief currency strategist at NAB, He's beautifully well spoken and articulated very clearly why last year they picked all the major drivers of change in the currency, but the outcome was different to what they expected. So they said, these are the three things that we think will drive currency change this year, and this is what we think they're going to do. And then the currency didn't do what it was supposed to do based on those drivers. Is there any good long-term evidence you're aware of about the value of hedging your portfolio versus leaving it unhedged?
Yeah, look, I can't cite specific evidence, you know, any sort of academic studies or those sort of things.
Timeframes matter, I imagine. You probably need a hell of a long time frame to get a really good outcome.
I think I don't have evidence to support this. My sense is that currency movements over time might be somewhat easier to predict than on a short-term or a medium-term basis. That's all completely anecdotal, and I don't have evidence to support that. Look, I do know internally here at Magellan, for our high conviction fund and for our global trust that do have this active currency hedging program. That has added a very small amount to our cumulative returns. I mean, it has been additive, but it's only been to a very small degree to the returns for clients over 1 year, 3 year, 5 years. So it has helped us a little. But I'm not aware of evidence beyond that around the benefit of hedging versus completely unhedged. And, it, you know, different managers, different fund managers treat currency hedging differently. Even here at Magellan we do. We have completely hedged versions of certain products and completely unhedged versions of certain products, and that allows our clients as the investors to make their own decisions whether they want a certain allocation to one or the other or a mixture of both. And I know other asset managers have that view as well, where they might offer completely hedged or unhedged versions or run a partially hedged currency program within their portfolios.
So one observation, if you are going down the hedged path and you're stripping out the impact of potentially volatile movements in the currency, your portfolio return should be more consistent. Is that fair to say?
In theory. I mean, if everything's operating correctly, that's how it's designed to work. Yeah, I mean, that is the intent. And as I mentioned, we've got a limited amount of evidence from the funds that we've had for a couple of years that have these active programs. That those currency programs have been marginally additive to returns. So far so good, but I wouldn't want anyone to sort of leave this thinking we use that currency hedging program to try and generate returns.
It's really to add value. Risk. Okay, so it's worth noting at this point also, there is a cost to hedging. Like, it costs you to take out those futures contracts and so on. Therefore, it may well, if it's just a risk management tool, detract from returns, right? Because you paid for an additional expense, but if it's done the right job in stripping out risk, well, that's a price you're happy to pay for some people. When we talk about currency, we tend to think primarily about the Australian dollar versus the US dollar. Or if, like me, you go to the UK immediately after you finish university, you worry about the pound a lot. Maybe you worry about the pound a lot at the moment anyway because of Brexit.
Right.
Any other currencies Australian investors should keep an eye on, or that they should sort of keep wondering about what's going on there?
I think it's probably appropriate to suggest, obviously, each individual needs to think about their own circumstances and international exposures. I think you're probably right that the main exposure most Australian investors are likely to have is to US dollar-based assets, be it direct equities or index funds or things like that. That's probably going to be the case, that's the most relevant exchange rate to most Australian investors. But it could be the case that they have exposure to Swiss franc assets or yen or euros, as the case may be. And of course, you're right. I mean, people are always considering overseas holidays and that they want to be thinking about how much it's going to cost them. And so, of course, that's relevant to each individual as well and their own plans.
We do get that question a bit, which is, I'm going away.
How do I
plan for this? I'm like, God, don't ask me. I definitely did not get it right with my $3 to the pound, that's for sure. So is currency a sufficient risk for investors to avoid global markets? As I said, in all of these recent conversations, it came out very clearly that this was one of the top risks that investors are worried about when they look at going into international markets, is currency that concerns them.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that investors, of course, should be thinking about. Personally, I don't think currency by itself is a sufficient reason, because I think investors, through certain managers, can probably get exposure, offshore exposure, but have that currency risk managed for them through hedging programs. But investing offshore without a currency hedge is a different game, and maybe a real reason for concern. So if investors are thinking about investing offshore without any sort of currency protection around their portfolio, that could be very challenging, and it could add another element of volatility to their returns. Aside from just the results from the equity investments that they make, is of course they're going to get some exposure to currency movements as well. So that would be a real reason to be concerned. But I think given that there are so many options and alternatives in terms of managers or even doing it directly, you can manage to a high extent, that currency volatility risk. And therefore, I don't think it by itself is a sufficient reason not to invest offshore.
So the reason we give investors to think about investing offshore and diversify away from that quite concentrated number of sectors that they are exposed to in Australia is that it gives you exposure to all the stuff you can't get here. And many of those sectors have been the high growth sectors of the last decade, right? Technology is the most obvious example where Australia has a very limited technology sector, and even when we do produce a unicorn, they go and list in the US, like Atlassian. Yeah. So every now and then we do something incredible and then they, you know,
disappears.
Don't. So for investors who are looking to get exposure to those high growth markets and so on, currency shouldn't be a sufficient reason to avoid them altogether. It's just thinking about whether or not you want to have the currency stripped out of your risk profile entirely, whether you want to have it managed a little bit for you with an active program such as you talked about, or whether that's not a concern for you and you're happy to just take the ride.
That's right.
That's
And I think the other thing too is, at least with our experience at Magellan, is a lot of the offshore assets that we've owned for clients have tended to be in the United States or in Europe, other developed markets, where the cost of hedging is actually quite low. But it may be the case that if investors want to invest in certain emerging markets, that they may still be able to hedge out some of that currency risk, but they're probably going to pay at a reasonable price for it. It may be prohibitively expensive, or it may just be a cost that has some impact on the returns they receive after currency from those emerging markets.
So we do get investors who like ETFs and so on. So for investors who are looking at that, almost every single index they're looking at, they have a hedged or an unhedged option. It's worth telling them. So they tend to be 100% hedged or 100% unhedged.
Yeah.
The middle ground is not there. Yeah. So don't worry about the middle ground. It's either, you know, you have no currency exposure or you have complete currency exposure. And the only thing you really need to consider in that decision is your risk profile and the cost of the hedging if you are going with the hedged option.
Yeah, that's right.
Chris, you and your team produce some fantastic content, probably not specifically on hedging too much, but investors can access these directly. Where would they go to keep up to date with the insights and ideas you put in the world?
The best source of information on all things Magellan would be our website, so magellangroup.com.au. And there they're going to find a lot of information on our process. And there is a bit of a description on how we think about currency hedging for those products that it's relevant for. But you'll also find broader insights across how we're thinking about markets, investing, portfolio positioning at any point in time. You'll also find all the contact details for our distribution team on the website as well. So if there's other questions about any of this and how it works, your audience can reach out to those members of the team.
Awesome. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Also, we love having you listening to this podcast, and we hope it's been helpful for you in your journey to creating wealth. We always love to hear from you. So if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.